Hi, my name is Kudai Chimeza. I'm a director in the Banking, Finance and Projects Practice here at CDH. I'm excited to host a conversation about creating your own space in law today. I'm going to ask my guest to introduce herself.
Thank you, Kudai. My name is Lebohang Mabidikani. I'm also a director here at CDH and I am in the competition law practice.
Great to have you here, Lebo.
Thank you.
I think to start, Lebo, please tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I'm obviously a competition law specialist and I have been practicing in this area of law for over 15 years in different capacities. I've spent about half my career as a regulator and I've spent the other half as a practitioner. And then from a personal perspective, I'm a mother to a 27-year-old young woman. I'm also a wife, a sister, a friend, a daughter, but essentially quite well-rounded life, I would say.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
Yeah.
So your career has had a few moves and turns in it, but I just want to go back to your background. How has your background and your role as a mother, as a wife, a sister and friend impacted your career?
I think definitely my background has impacted my career in a positive way, in the sense that I come from the kind of background that forced me to be resilient. I had a child very young. I was just out of matric. You know, when my friends were going to university, I had to look after my child and raise her. And as a result of that, I actually had to go and work instead of studying. And I was like a bank teller for about 6 years before, you know, one day I just woke up and I said I wanted to do more with my life. And eventually I then went and registered for my law degree and I quit my job and I went in full time. So you can imagine, right, that I was used to being quite independent, having my own money, and suddenly I had to rely on my family to support me and also assist me in supporting my daughter while I tried to reach for my dreams.
That's quite an adjustment. And how was that, like going to university after having a bit of more life experience?
It was a humbling experience, I must say. I think I love to throw around this line. I always say, don't fight the season, you know, work with the season. I had a lot of introspection, a lot of soul searching before I went to university. And I did understand that I would be older than your average first year student. You know, there I was. There were moments of feeling, you know, a little bit out of place, a little bit, you know, in a strange environment. But I had to roll with those punches. I actually learned a lot about understanding that it's not every space that looks familiar to you that's going to be comfortable, you know. Have that internal conversation with yourself and make the necessary adjustments. And so I remembered, I'm a student, I'm unemployed. Yes, I'm a mother, I'm wearing a couple of hats. I'm not competing with anybody. You know, I know what I want. The idea is to get into varsity, get that degree and get out again and go and make a living for my child. And that really was what helped me to survive that era of my life.
Yeah, I think you touched on an important aspect, which I'd like you to come back to later. Just the lesson at an early point of your career that you're not competing with anyone.
Yeah. Important for our industry, I must say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's something we need to remind ourselves throughout the journey, not just during our studies. So after you finished your studies, what did you do next?
So I was lucky enough to be quite vigilant when I was at campus. I, you know, found an ad. It was a very obscure ad in a very obscure corner, advertising an opportunity for vacation work at one of the big firms in Sandton. And so I think that was in my second year. And I applied and I was lucky enough to get in. So by the time I finished my articles, I actually had secured articles at one of the big firms in Sandton. So I went to serve articles for 2 years. And that was a very interesting experience. Essentially, I think like some people, I mean, I know that it's not most, but essentially for me, articles was not the easiest experience. It was a big shock to my system. I mean, I did very well in university. I was a top student and suddenly you get to a big law firm and you are at the bottom of the food chain. You know, again, another mentality adjustment was required there, you know, because at varsity, by your final year, you are a senior. And as I say, I was a top student. So essentially, I was probably walking around with a bit of a chip on my shoulder. And so I got there, I realized, oh my goodness, I'm right at the bottom and there's a lot more important people than me. I had to really readjust again. But what was great is that all those learnings from my background, you know, with having my child young and having to adjust that first year at university came rushing back for that scenario as well. I remembered, I'm here to learn. I'm here to actually learn from these people who are a lot more important than I am, but certainly they do need me. The greater ecosystem needs me. So I needed to just make sure that I could work with the situation that I found myself in.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like you were doing all of this on your own. You were finding ads and then obscure corner, you're doing articles and struggling through them. Did you have anyone who was walking the journey with you?
In a very unconventional way, but yes. So I actually come from a family of lawyers, right? I'm the youngest of 7 children, and there's a generational gap between me and my siblings. But the point is that 4 amongst the 7 children that my mother has are lawyers, including myself. And my big brother, who's an advocate, is actually the one that walked with me, who made sure that I got to VEC work when I didn't have a car, who made sure that when I was crying, you know, reminded me that I'm stronger than I think, reminded me that the journey is long, so I need to try again, and also reminded me to do well, just to excel. You know, he always used to say to me that he's not going to accept a mediocrity from me, so he pushed me quite a lot. So yeah, I'd say my big brother played a big role. Without my family, I don't think I could have made it. In fact, I got married at the end of my first year of articles, and so I had even more family. I had a husband, and yeah, I always look back and I think to myself, I don't think I would have finished articles without my husband, because as you would know, like, articles are very demanding. It's a very demanding time in your life. You've got long hours that you have to work. I would actually leave the office at like 9 p.m. on a Friday night, and my husband would be like, no, call me when you're done. You leave your car, I'll come pick you up so that you're safe. You know, in short, family is invaluable in your professional journey.
Absolutely. I think many people who are starting, like myself, I'm the first lawyer in my family, and there's a tendency to think that, like, I'm doing this all on my own, not actually fully realizing that even though my family is not a family of lawyers, they're making significant contributions to my journey. So you've had quite a few twists and turns at every stage of your career. That's been quite interesting. So after articles, what were your thoughts around staying in practice? It sounded like a grueling experience. Did you consider it at all?
At the end of articles, I thought to myself, I'd never practice again. It was a difficult experience for me, because I think there were just so many dynamics, as I say, shock to my system. Remember, I'd worked previously, right? And I worked for a bank and I was a teller, and literally I had an 8-to-4 type of job. So I don't think I'd ever heard of people coming out of the office at 9 p.m. for whatever reason before, you know. Much as my brothers are also lawyers, I think they regulated their time differently, and they don't come from the big corporate law space. They took different paths. That alone, you know, the long hours was a shock to my system. That took a while for me to actually, you know, get used to. Also, just getting to grips with the fact that when you're serving articles, it's important to have some chemistry or find chemistry with your principal. That's not always an easy thing, right? And now that I'm a director myself, I'm very careful about the role I play in training candidate attorneys, but also in the way I relate to them. Based on my experience, it really, really takes a lot out of the CA to sort of find their balance. But I think if people who are senior as you and I would take the time just to stop for one moment and ask a candidate attorney, how are you? How are you doing? Are you not drowning? Are you learning? What can I do to make your experience better? And just to keep the right temperament as well, you know, don't ask those that question, you know, when you're angry because the candidate attorney did something wrong. But to just make that a culture, to say, this is an environment for learning, it's conducive for your growth, and so don't be afraid to ask questions, you know. So unfortunately, that's not the experience that I had. And so I guess once again, my life and my journey has forced me to do things slightly differently and to be conscious of maybe what more than what other people would be conscious of, because we really are in a very fast-paced profession. So sometimes it's not because a person is trying to be difficult, a director trying to be difficult to a candidate attorney, but maybe it's just that we're just so busy. But I've now learned to just sort of pause and take care of the person with the hope that the person will give their best and become the best candidate attorney that they can be.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're saying that you thought you'd never practice again, it just shows the importance. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember my second rotation was better than the first one. But by the end of the first rotation, I was completely depleted. My self-esteem was like really, really low. I just questioned myself. I really didn't know who I was. And much as my second rotation director tried, I think I was just not in the right space mentally. In fact, I remember him having a conversation with me about retention, saying, you know, I really think you're intelligent. I really think you've got something here. I'd like to talk about retaining you. And I said, no, thank you. I actually said, no, thanks. I am not interested in that. And I literally went home and I sat home for 9 months. Took that time to rebuild the inner me. Eventually, I started working for the Competition Commission of South Africa, and that's when I started to slowly find myself again.
What even contributes to just that falling apart of who you are or your knowledge of self? I think you mentioned coming from a space where you're a top student, then all of a sudden you're the one who knows the least in the group. Do you think that contributes to that?
Yes, I do. But I also think that it's probably one of the least contributing factors. I think that privilege is a big deal in South Africa, right? In the sense that my brothers who are lawyers who came before me were apartheid era lawyers, essentially. What that means is that they did not get the opportunities that I got in terms of getting into a big law firm and all of that. What that does to someone like me is that in as much as I'm exposed, I actually lack some important exposure as well. So in other words, they can't tell me what this environment looks like, how it operates, you know? And so I would say one of the factors really is exposure, a lack of exposure that would destabilize someone who's doing articles because, you know, they're just not prepared mentally. They don't even see it. You know, the mind, it takes a while for the mind to sort of understand how great one can be. You kind of have a sense that you can be great, but I think you're always in your mind confined to your spaces until you find another space and you realize, oh my goodness, I can expand. And the same goes for students who went to previously disadvantaged universities. If you look at the typical trend with big law firms, right, there is less, I think, focus on the previously disadvantaged universities than there is on the big ones. Typically then, law students in the big universities would now get to understand there's a big law firm and this is how they work and this is what I can do. So essentially, even at the end of your degree, once you've graduated, you may very well not be on equal footing with your fellow peers who come from a different background.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you said about exposure also speaks to the kind of conversations you can contribute to once you're in the space. I remember when I was a CA, we had a lunchtime discussion and people were talking about the texture of snow in Switzerland versus I'd never seen snow, so I actually couldn't participate in the discussion. Like, my entire knowledge of snow was what was on the TV. And that contributes to you feeling smaller and feeling like you can't contribute more, and it digs at your self-esteem. I think it's important that you put that up.
Yeah. No, I mean, 100%. But I think, having said that, what's important, this is hindsight speaking, right? And this is meant to really encourage those who come after us to say, you know what, we understand those things that are happening in your context that are destabilizing you mentally, you know, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually even, you know, because the intellectual part is more real than people think. You may be smart, but you may struggle to perform at work because you've got other internal unresolved issues which have got nothing to do with your intellectual capacity. But the point I wanted to make was to say, you know, having had those experiences, I can now say to everybody that comes after me that it can be done. There's a lot of work that you have to do, internal work. It can be done. I've done it. I've achieved it. I'm not perfect. You know, my journey, as you say, has been rocky. It did take a little bit of time for me to land on my feet. But once you've landed on your feet, you realize that all of this is actually a fallacy, right? The fact that somebody went to a big university and you went to like a university in a rural area, it actually means nothing in the end. You know, you may be fighting preconceived ideas about, you know, the caliber of student that may come from that type of university versus a big university, an urban university. You may be fighting stereotypes about accent. I mean, this is South Africa, right? English is not our first language, most of us. And in some of our families, you know, we don't speak English. So what that does to you as well is that it affects your command of the English language, which is another issue that goes into, you know, self-esteem issues. Yeah, I think having functioned as a head of department, for example, one of the things that a director does or an executive does is to manage people. So I would want to say to younger lawyers, young people who are wanting to study law, that you also have to have a little bit of faith in those who came before you. In other words, trust that I know the difference between someone being smart and just them twanging, to hopefully trust that I'm not going to judge your intellectual capacity because of your accent. But I think, you know, we are slowly getting to a point in South Africa where we are all smarter, you know, not to judge people based on such trivial things.
Okay, so we've talked about some of the things that can destabilize someone, but you said you really found yourself after taking the 9 months and starting a new job. What were some of the things that helped to rebuild your confidence in yourself?
Yeah, I think it was having the right mentor. I want to give a shout out to a lady. Her name is Grace Mohammed. Grace is Namibian, and I know she's based in Namibia now, but in those days, she actually worked for the commission in South Africa. Truly, really, I don't think she actually understands the role that she played in the person that I've become now, right? In the sense that she was the first person I worked with, a senior, who basically reminded me of of my own potential. She listened. And I think that's something that's lacking in leadership quite a lot. She created a space for me to make mistakes. Again, you know, it's a function of personalities, environments, and the profession, the legal profession generally, that, you know, there's very low tolerance for mistakes. But Grace created an environment for me where I could make mistakes and learn from them. She took time in her busy schedule to direct me towards the right material to read, which would enable me to then perform whatever tasks she gave me to the best of my ability. She complimented me. You know, like you really need to hear somebody saying, well done, you know, especially when you've had a hard time. Just as much as if you do something wrong, I might say to you, you've really messed up. It's actually even more important when I've done something right for you to say, you've done this very well. It actually gives a certain balance in my mind, right? That, you know what, yesterday I messed up and it didn't feel good getting that negative but constructive feedback, because negative feedback ought to be given constructively, right? And so you probably have one of those not so great days when you get that feedback that you didn't do so well. But I promise you, the next day when you've done something well and your superior says, you know, you've really done well, that just propels you to the next level.
It gives you more confidence as well. You start feeling like you're starting to get it. You know how to do this. Absolutely. So how was that journey? So you'd moved from big law now to working at a regulator.
Oh, yes. So interestingly, I was with the regulator for 2 years. And because I think it took literally about a year for me to bounce back and to remember who I was, you know, with Grace's help. And I started missing law practice. I was like, you know, maybe I left practice a little too soon. And by the end of the second year at the regulator, I went back and I joined another law firm. This one is quite an emotional one for me. So my boss at the time, the founder of that law firm, is the great Ntabi Seng Dlamini. So literally, I got to know her for more than 14 years. And that was another mentor. So I fell, you know, I got into the right hands of the regulator only to go back to practice and find a completely different environment, another place conducive for learning. Ntabi Seng was one of the greatest mentors one could have. But I think what she taught me is that I needed to bulldoze my way into big spaces. I mean, Ntabi Seng was a young Black woman who was doing matters alongside very big firms in Sandton. And I think at the time, the staff complement at Dlamini Attorneys was like, what, 6 people? It was incredible, the work that she was doing in those days. And in fact, she hired me because I had now become an expert in competition law. And so what she did was she basically threw me in the deep end and she said, I hired you because I trust you. You are going to be my head of litigation and competition law. So you've got to now go back and remember that you're an all-rounded attorney, not just a competition lawyer, and you're going to run litigation. So you can imagine how entrusting me with such great responsibility, coupled with my newly found confidence from the regulator, coupled with her saying, I know you can do it. I know you definitely can do this and achieve this. I think when that happened, I just, again, I was propelled to another level of my own excellence that I probably didn't think I had.
So it speaks to the power of mentorship in building your in your journey and in building your confidence. Absolutely. So how did you end up here?
After being with Thabi Singh for about 2 years, I had decided then that I wanted to focus solely on competition law. I've found my niche, it's competition law. Now I need to grow in this area. And so it happened that the commission was looking for a senior analyst in those days in their M&A department. And I went back there as a senior analyst. And within a period of 5 years, I was in the executive committee. I'm at the commission. I was head of M&A. I hit a ceiling, essentially. And I think the other thing that really worked beautifully for me in that period when I was still at the commission is that I moved from M&A to market conduct, which is the division that focuses on abuse of dominance. I moved to cartels. So if I was ever a well-rounded competition lawyer, at that time, I was sure that I could handle any area of competition law with much authority because now I was cemented in all the different aspects of competition law. Yeah. So essentially, I thought to myself, okay, what do I conquer next? You know, what can I do next? I mean, I've proven myself in government. Have I proven myself enough in the private sector? Maybe not in terms of, you know, traditional corporate with the companies and entities. But I thought to myself, what I need to do is to operate at a very high level in a law firm. That'll give me exposure to the entire industry. And so that's how I ended up here. I thought to myself, what better time to move? I was senior enough to move laterally as a director. And so that's how I find myself here, enjoying myself.
Enjoying yourself and making an impact on the juniors that are coming behind you. So, I mean, having considered now, having reflected on your entire journey, what would you say to a law student, an articled clerk, and someone who's just started as an admitted attorney?
So, a law student, I would say, away with mediocrity. In our line of business, you won't even get your foot in the door if your marks aren't great. It's just as simple as that. Be serious from first year, because remember, with the curriculum, it gets tougher. So maybe in your first and second year, it may be the best time for you to hit those 70s and the 70 plus marks. Make sure you excel academically and try and keep it up until you finish. But essentially, don't wait till your third year and your fourth year to start, you know, achieving great marks, because that's too late. A lot of people know, a lot of the big firms basically hire their candidate attorneys by their second, by their third year. So by then, you're just too late, right? Your latter excellence doesn't mean as much. Also, just applying on time, right? By your second year of your law degree, you are ready to apply for articles, which is why it's even more important that your first year, second year marks are great. But for those who have made mistakes and who didn't start well, my advice would be, it's not too late, you know? Not everybody is made for big law. Look beyond big law firms. If you didn't get, you know, you couldn't get in for articles. And regulators are also a great place, by the way, to look. If you ask me whether one should be looking directly at corporate, directly at regulators straight after your law degree, I would say no. You know, try and find articles, even if it's in a small firm, so that you can get yourself admitted. You stand a better chance if you're admitted than if you just have your law degree, certainly in the long run. And then when it comes to candidate attorneys, I would say keep the faith. Don't lose heart. It's sometimes subjective. Just because I don't think you're good enough, it doesn't mean you're not good enough, actually. In hindsight, that's what I've learned. Again, it's a reflection of my personal experience. I say this confidently because I speak not about, you know, myself or you or our fellow directors. I'd like to believe that we train candidate attorneys with the utmost good faith, you know. But you don't know where, you know, another CA is, in what firm they are, in what department they are, in what environment they are. And we don't know who the principal is, and what attitude they have and what personality they have. Sometimes it's just a function of chemistry, interestingly. So it's got nothing to do with the fact that, you know, your principal doesn't like you or they don't think much of you. Sometimes it's really just a personality clash. So take heart, keep on doing it. I've got it's a terrible example, but I just want to demonstrate how bad it can get for some people. It's almost as if the profession doesn't want to talk about how uncomfortable articles and it can be for candidate attorneys. Classic example, I had a friend slash colleague in our intake of articles, and he was fired every day. Like, he was fired every single day, and his principal used to scream at him. I mean, literally, that's what happened to me as well. My principal used to scream at me at the top of her voice, and the entire higher flow would hear. You're not going to excel. You're just not going to, right? Even if you have it in you, now you're too uncomfortable. You're scared. You're just a mess, you know? So the reality is that there's two sides to a coin. I'm demanding of CAs, and I'm saying, I'm advising you, work hard, do well, be the best you can be, you know, read, offer to do work, you know, put up your hand, try and learn from different people, different departments, different disciplines. But in reality, you may be doing all the right things, but just not having a good time. It is not a reflection on you. Knock on a different door.
Okay. Yeah. And be resilient. I think that's the message I took from your story.
Yeah, definitely be resilient. You've got to grow a thick skin. You have to.
And then just to maybe someone starting their career, so post-admission, what would you say to them about the journey?
Mentorship, mentorship, mentorship. I cannot overemphasize the importance of mentorship. Sometimes you need a sounding board for career pathing. You may be an associate in a big law firm, but you know, remember being an associate, especially a first year associate, right? You are literally like a month away from when you were a CA. Yeah. So you're still going through the motions. So mentorship is critical. I've mentored so many lawyers, young lawyers, and interestingly, just the mentorship conversation and relationship resulted in some people realizing big law is not for them. Doesn't mean you're a failure. Doesn't mean you're not a good lawyer. Don't be afraid to follow your passion. If you're passionate about human rights and you want to work for a human rights group, you must just go for it. The measure of success is not, you know, whether or not you're in a big law firm. So situate yourself in such a way that you know what the options are if you're in a big law firm, because you may not need to leave a big law firm if you want to focus on human rights. You may really want to be in your pro bono department. Or if you're really like a public servant at heart, you may very well want to work for a government organization that deals with that kind of subject matter and get your fulfillment, you know?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree on the mentorship. And then what would you say to people like me, the directors, people who are, maybe I'm still at the early stages of being a director, but what would you recommend we do in terms of how we interact with our candidates, our associates?
Be kind. Remember that you are not born a director. Remember that you are once a candidate attorney. If anything, for those of us who had great mentors or principals during articles, remember that you benefited from their kindness in the sense that because they were kind, that's they created a conducive an environment that's conducive for learning. You know, so don't forget where you came from. And I'll even take it further and say, you know, again, I'm a very spiritual person, very professional, but very spiritual. And I always take it back to my spiritual background. And I say, you know, do unto others as you'd want to be done unto you. Let's not let these big buildings fool us and we end up, you know, losing the human touch that should actually dominate everything that we do. I see myself as someone who is on a mission to do good in the world, and God just happened to put me in a big law firm. And what that means is that I have to sort of minister by doing good work the right way, with the right attitude, teach people, having the responsibility to give back what I've basically been given.
Your journey has been so interesting and I've learned a lot. But before we bring this to an end, is there anything else that you'd like just want to highlight from your journey, or just, you know, final words?
Yeah, I mean, final words are that we never stop learning. I'm still learning. I don't get it right all the time. I'm not perfect. But I think the most important thing is to try and do your best. And then, you know, bigger doors will open, bigger and better opportunities will present themselves. I just think that the amount of trying we put in, right? Because it's not the amount of perfection. It's not the lack of mistakes. It's the amount of trying, the resilience, the pushing, you know, pushing when doors are closed, pushing when you didn't get it right yesterday. That is what is going to get us to the next level.
Wow, thank you, Lebo. That's so powerful. Thanks so much for taking the time. I've certainly enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.